And you were listening to KBOO Portland.
Boo today during our end of year match. Wrapping up December 31st, donations from all new and increasing members will be matched one-to-one up to $15,000 from the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Give an extra gift today or become a new member and your membership will be doubled to support independent community media and citizen journalism at KBOO. Thank you.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
De nuevo, esta música divina.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esa pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con alguien.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight. Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
It is 5 p.m. Coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Androids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Portland City Council unanimously approved a citywide inclusionary zoning policy.
A federal judge has temporarily halted all logging on a plot that was once part of the Elliott State Forest in the Oregon Coast Range.
And the state of Texas announced that they were discontinuing Medicaid funding to Planned Parenthood.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 21st, 2016. I'm Lisa Loving.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. A federal judge has temporarily halted all logging on a plot that was once part of the Elliott State Forest in the Oregon Coast Range. U.S. District Court Judge Ann Aiken's injunction came as a result of Cascadia Wildlands, the Audubon Society of Portland, and the Center for Biological Diversity suing to stop the logging they say would harm the habitat of the marbled murrelet. The marbled murrelet is a Pacific seabird that builds its nests in mature forests up to 30 miles inland and is currently on the threatened species list. The plot in question is 350 acres of forest on the Benson Ridge that the state sold to Scott Timber Company and Roseburg Forest Products in 2014. Scott Timber had planned to clear-cut 49 acres of the forest, known to be home to federally protected coastal coho salmon and the northern spotted owl. Aiken's decision prevents any logging on the property until she rules on the overall case, which might take more than a year to happen. The state has been considering selling the rest of the Elliott State Forest, Oregon's first state forest, to fund schools, but Cascadia Wildlands is hoping that the recent injunction will affect the outcome of such deliberations.
The nomination of Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt to head the EPA and Montana Representative Ryan Zinke to head the Interior Department clearly signals the Trump administration intends to reduce environmental protections and expand fossil fuel production in the United States. Since many of the products would be for export to Asia, they represent a major environmental threat to the Pacific Northwest, and we should brace for a renewed push to expand the fossil fuel transportation, refinery, and shipment terminal infrastructure throughout the region. Going forward, KBOO reporters Tom Flynn and Ray Bodwell are working on the local impact of federal policies around fossil fuel infrastructure. Their emphasis will be on what you need to know and what actions you need to take to defend the environment. This is the first of their reports.
Well, first of all, I'm not a believer in global warming. I'm not a believer in man-made global warming.
We're going to cancel billions and billions of dollars in payments to the United Nations climate change programs.
We're going to allow the Keystone Pipeline and so many other things to move forward.
and we are going to end the EPA intrusion into your lives.
Throughout the campaign, Donald Trump presented himself as a conservationist's worst nightmare, and his election raised concerns among environmentalists worldwide. Not only is he heavily invested in the fossil fuel industry personally, he has repeatedly called climate change a hoax and vowed to, quote, cancel job-killing restrictions on the production of shale energy and clean coal, end quote. And he appears to be stockpiling his administration with climate deniers and individuals with deep ties to the fossil fuel industry. I recently spoke with Jasmine Zimmer Stuckey of the Columbia Riverkeeper to get her thoughts on the environmental threat posed by the pending Trump administration and how the Riverkeeper plans to move forward.
The Columbia Riverkeeper is an environmental nonprofit. We are a mix of scientists, organizers, and attorneys who come to the table and try and figure out the best way to protect and restore the Columbia and the communities alongside of it.
Jasmine, the EPA recently deemed the Army Corps of Engineers environmental review around the Longview coal terminal as inadequate. Is that sufficient to stop that project, and did we even need that project in the first place?
The largest proposed coal export terminal in North America is proposed in Longview, Washington. It would bring in 16 coal trains a day to export U.S. coal overseas to Asia. And the EPA is considered to be the authority on environmental impact statements. So if EPA tells another agency that their environmental review that they did is inadequate, it carries a lot of weight. And, by and large, it was inadequate. They chose to look at the narrowest scope possible for the impacts of building a coal export terminal. They basically drew, a circle around the facility itself. In this day and age, when we know about the impacts of climate change, the burning of coal in one part of the globe affects another part of the globe. You just can't draw these narrow circles anymore. It was irresponsible of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to draw such a narrow scope, and we're glad the EPA wrote such a strong letter.
What do you and the Riverkeeper think of the potential risks posed by the Trump administration, and what would you say to concerned citizens?
I think the appointments made under the next administration will have a very significant impact on, our environmental protections. Along the Columbia River in the Pacific Northwest, we've had amazing victories. We've defeated many of these projects. And I want to remind listeners that those victories happened at the local level. They didn't happen because someone in Washington, D.C. decided that this was a bad idea. They happened because community members got together and decided it was a bad idea. The decisions made at the local level have happened because local community members fought for them and changed local decisions.
So with that in mind, Jasmine, are there any local projects that our listeners should be paying particular attention to?
Yes. So situated between the Longview Coal Export Terminal in Longview, Washington, which would be the largest coal export terminal in North America, and the Vancouver Oil Terminal, which would be the largest oil terminal in North America, there's a town called Kalama, Washington. What is proposed in Kalama is the largest natural gas to methanol a refinery and export terminal in the world. The facility proposes to bring in a massive amount of natural gas, refine it in Kalama into liquid methanol, and then ship it overseas to China, where it will be refined further into the end product, which is plastics.
What can people be doing outside of Kalama to make sure that this gets the visibility it needs?
Because it is such a massive natural gas giant, it actually could shift the natural gas use of the entire region. This project has the potential to lock our region into natural gas consumption for 50 to 100 years in the future, because it could create such a demand for natural gas that we actually see more massive gas pipelines being built to supply this facility. So one of the things that folks can do from around the region is there's a public comment period that's open right now. Folks can go online to ColumbiaRiverKeeper.org and submit your comment, and you can actually go to a public hearing on it January 4th from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Cowlitz Public Utility District offices in Longview, Washington.
And I assume that the Riverkeepers have more information about this available online?
We do. We have it all on our website, and we actually just released a new 4-minute video. It's really lovely.
Jasmine, thank you so much for your comments. For KBOO, I'm Ray Bodwell.
Last night, the Trillium Charter School in North Portland hosted an event to launch a Portland Love Army intended to serve and protect our local racial and social justice communities in the wake of Trump's electoral victory. Approximately 40 people formed a circle to share feelings of anxiety, hope, anger, and mutual support with respect to the recent election, the surge in hate crimes it inspired, and the legislative threats it represents. A representative was on hand from Poschein's Café de la Soul, a highly regarded North Portland eatery, to discuss and request donations for a new program called Teach Me to Fish that will train students with culinary skills and place them with local restaurants to ensure employment. PSU professor Alexander Reed Ross spoke about fascism, ways to recognize and to resist it, and identified members of Trump's incoming administration who have ties to white nationalist groups and track records of working on anti-immigrant legislation such as Arizona's SB 1070. And Mimi Gurman, an organizer in St. John's, talked about the need for citizens to take protection into their own hands rather than relying on the police by forming neighborhood mutual support groups who will show up in person to shield people from harassment. One man said the impending loss of Medicare and Medicaid could literally spell death for him within 3 months. The groups plan to meet on a monthly basis and to expand into a citywide coalition to meet the coming challenges.
The hip-hop crackdown in the city of Portland continues. I filed this report earlier today. Almost all of which were lodged by one neighbor. Cases where white neighbors in gentrified neighborhoods have forced out black business owners and hip-hop venues are old hat in the city of Portland. From the Cleo Lillian Social Club in the 1990s to the Fontainebleau in 2013 and the Blue Monk in 2014, many, many African and African-American entrepreneurs and artists have for years speculated that the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and the Portland Office of Neighborhood Involvement target their community disproportionately. In the case of the Blue Monk, the Fontainebleau, and now also Soleil's, alleged violations of the city's complaint-driven noise ordinance has landed business owners in the crosshairs of city and state bureaucracy. Soleil's attorney, Ashley Albies, was unable to comment for this story. But in October, a federal judge refused to throw out the civil rights lawsuit brought by Fontainebleau owner Rodney DeWalt against the city of Portland. In his lawsuit, DeWalt charges that the city put his business under disproportionate scrutiny in the weeks before his club was shut down by the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the OLCC. He alleges because he is a black business owner. The Soleil's case is heard tomorrow morning, that's Thursday morning at 9 a.m. at 1900 Southwest 4th Avenue, Suite 3000. For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
This morning, the Portland City Council unanimously approved a citywide inclusionary zoning policy, which will require most apartment and condominium developers to set aside some units for low-income residents. The policy is intended to help renters and poorer homebuyers by creating affordable housing in desirable, closer-in neighborhoods. Portland's rapidly rising housing costs have pushed many people to the city's outskirts. Under inclusionary zoning, developments with 20 or more units will set aside 20% of them for households making less than 80% of the median family income, which in 2016 was $58,650 for a family of four. The program became possible after Portland officials pushed the state legislature to lift a ban on inclusionary zoning earlier this year. Thousands of apartment units currently in the process of getting city approval may not be subject to the requirements that take effect in February.
The Columbia Nuclear Generating Station in Richland, Washington, experienced an unplanned shutdown this past weekend due to an equipment failure. Cold weather caused a malfunction between the plant and the electrical grid, triggering an automatic safety shutdown. After the stoppage, maintenance crews also discovered a leak in the plant's backup cooling system. The backup system is intended to cool the nuclear core in the event of an emergency. The leak was described as a minor maintenance issue, but the plant is not allowed to go back online until repairs have been made. The plant also experienced an unplanned shutdown in March when the control room had indications of a failure in the cooling system. That shutdown was later traced to operator error. Prior to that, the plant had gone 6 years without any unplanned stoppages. There are currently 99 nuclear power plants in the United States, but the Columbia Generating Station is the only one in the Pacific Northwest. The Columbia plant in Richland is capable of providing enough electricity to power the city of Seattle, and during normal operation generates electricity worth $1 million per day.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Anti-War Radio with Scott Horton at 6, and then stay tuned for Free Culture Radio at 6:30. At 7 o'clock, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather in Portland should be rainy with patchy fog and a high around 43. East of the Cascades, rain will also be likely in Hood River with a high of 36. Today in history, in 1946, Louis Jordan's fast-paced single Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens debuted on the R&B charts.
In yet another Trump ethical lapse, Donald Trump's two oldest sons have been accused of selling access to their father the day after the inauguration. The access would come as a result of donations to the Opening Day Foundation, which would then forward the donations to unnamed conservation charities. According to the Center for Public Integrity, the foundation was only established on December 14th, and Trump's sons were listed as directors. In return for a $1 million donation, up to 16 individual donors would be invited to a private reception and photo opportunity with the president, entitled Opening Day 2017. Four lucky donors would also have the opportunity for a multi-day hunting or fishing trip with Donald Trump Jr. or Eric Trump. Yesterday, a Trump spokesman stated that Trump's sons would not be involved with the event, but both Snopes.com and the Center for Public Integrity have confirmed that Eric and Donald Jr. were listed as two of the four directors when the Opening Day Foundation was formed. The other directors were Dallas investor Gentry Beach and Tom Hicks Jr., the son of a Dallas billionaire. Both men are friends of Donald Trump Jr. And have raised millions for the Trump campaign.
Now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO says here's how NAFTA could be rewritten to benefit working people. The AFL-CIO says NAFTA has destroyed good middle-class American jobs, replacing them with exploitive sweatshop jobs in Mexico. But it doesn't have to be that way. To turn NAFTA into a tool to raise wages and working conditions throughout North America, the Labor Federation recommends several things in a basic blueprint to change NAFTA. 1. Get rid of the private justice system for corporations known as ISDS that allows corporations to challenge U.S. laws deemed to hurt them. Improve the labor and environment side treaties and make sure stronger labor and environmental standards are enforced. 3. Address currency manipulation by creating binding rules subject to enforcement and possible sanctions. Upgrade NAFTA's rules of origin, particularly on autos and auto parts, to reinforce auto sector jobs in North America. And delete the procurement chapter that undermines Buy American laws. More than 100 national organizations are calling on President Obama to use presidential pardon powers by issuing a pardon for lawfully present immigrants with years-old or low-level criminal offenses. Walter Barrientos is a lead organizer with Make the Road New York.
We're asking President Obama to exercise his executive power to pardon immigrants who have committed low-level offenses, and many of whom have many of these offenses on their records from decades ago, so that they will not be targeted for deportation under what we expect will be very aggressive immigration enforcement tactics of the Trump administration.
They say hundreds of thousands of immigrant families could be protected, and the new president could not undo presidential pardons. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is urging the flying public to speak out against Norwegian Air International's U.S. foreign air carrier permit. That's because that permit sets up a flag of convenience model for U.S. aviation that the union says risks hundreds of thousands of U.S. aviation jobs. AFA-CWA says it's the first step in outsourcing American aviation jobs, and it also fails to uphold the U.S.-EU Open Skies Agreement.
Brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield National Labor Office, empowering working Americans with stable health coverage for over 50 years. The National Labor Office is committed to remaining the top choice for the 17 million union workers, retirees, and families they serve. Online at bcbs.com/NLO.
Brought to you by the California Teachers Association, 325,000 educators who know quality public schools make a better California for all of us. Information on how California teachers are shaping a stronger future for our kids is online at cta.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
In the wake of Tuesday's terrorist attack on a Berlin Christmas market, Donald Trump renewed his intention to establish a Muslim registry in the United States and to temporarily block Muslims from entering the country. Speaking to reporters earlier today, he stated that the attack in Germany, which was claimed by the Islamic State, had vindicated him. Trump said that, quote, "All along, I've been proven to be right, 100% correct. What's happening is disgraceful." Trump had been calling for a Muslim ban for over a year. Early in the presidential campaign, he called for a total and complete shutdown of the entry of Muslims to the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what is going on. That proposal was strongly criticized by both Republicans and Democrats, but Trump has never really walked it back. Among other things, Muslim leaders assume that Trump will try to reintroduce the National Security Entry Exit Registration System that was discontinued several years ago. The NSEERS system was originally developed by current Trump advisor Kris Kobach. Civil rights groups have said that NSEERS unfairly targeted Muslims, and security experts have said it offered few security benefits.
Now, in the thick of the holidays, our KBU News poet tells the story of the Grinch who monopolized Christmas.
The Grinch who monopolized Christmas. Jeff Bezos is no bozo. He rules the mercantile world, bought the Washington Post, is going to space, and keeps expanding his span of control. Half the money spent on the web goes to Amazon. Half the online shoppers don't search but start with Amazon. If sellers don't let Amazon take their cut, they'll lose half the shoppers. If a product sells well on Amazon, they'll make a knockoff and sell it cheaper. In taking the sales out of stores, Amazon wiped out 250,000 jobs. Workers at Amazon fulfillment centers are overworked, underpaid, and non-union. Every dollar you spend on Amazon goes to the man, taking away our options to do anything but feed his greed. So go out to shop, a nearby store with locally sourced goods. Sales create jobs, make more sales. Let your money multiply here, because killing local businesses to save a buck or two isn't what makes life so dear. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael. Shop less, give more.
On Tuesday, the state of Texas announced they were discontinuing Medicaid funding to Planned Parenthood. The action would eliminate about $4 million a year in support to the Women's Health Organization and could impact 11,000 low-income Texans. The move by the Texas Health and Human Services Commission is the latest step in a long-standing battle between the commission and Planned Parenthood. In October of 2015, the commission announced their intention to block the organization from receiving funds from the Public Health Insurance Program. Planned Parenthood responded with a lawsuit asking for an injunction against the state action. Nothing further happened until Tuesday, when the state advised the nonprofit that their funding would be cut off in 30 days. Planned Parenthood immediately returned to federal court and added to their original lawsuit. The state's termination notice stated that Planned Parenthood was unable to provide medical services in a safe, legal, and ethical manner. The notice referred to undercover video evidence that was reported in April of 2015. Planned Parenthood has said they did nothing wrong, and the videos are generally considered to have been deceptively edited. Texas is not the only state attempting to block funding for women's health services, and it's assumed that the Texas effort will ultimately be decided in the courts. In the meantime, Planned Parenthood has indicated they will still provide medical services to Medicaid recipients.
The current frontrunner for the next Secretary of the Interior is Montana's only congressman, Republican Ryan Zinke. Zinke supports drilling and mining on federal land and is a climate change skeptic. If he's confirmed by the U.S. Senate, which seems likely at this point, Montana will have to fill his seat in Congress. That would require Democratic Governor Steve Bullock to call a special election to take place between 85 and 100 days after Zinke vacates his seat. There's an ongoing argument in Montana about what to do in the meantime. State law, rewritten last year, says the governor should appoint a replacement from the same party until the special election is held. But many Montana and federal officials now claim this law is unconstitutional and that Bullock should simply call for the special election and forego his right to make an interim appointment. Either way, one candidate mentioned for the seat is making waves, Richard Spencer, a white nationalist based in Whitefish, Montana, who has risen to national prominence over the course of Trump's racially charged presidential campaign. Spencer says he's only considering a run and admitted he didn't think it possible until Trump was elected president. Spencer's candidacy would represent one of the first prominent candidacies for national office from the racist so-called alt-right. It seems unlikely he would win at this point, given that the election for Montana's only congressional seat is a statewide race.
IKEA, the world's largest furniture retailer, is cracking down on teenagers hiding and having illegal sleepovers in its stores. The trend reportedly started this past August with two teens in Belgium who hid in a wardrobe until the store closed and spent the night in the store. A video of their exploits on YouTube titled "Two Idiots at Night in IKEA" has won 1.7 million views. Since then, copycat sleepovers have occurred at IKEA stores around the world, including in the United States, Canada, Japan, Australia, the Netherlands, and most recently, IKEA's home territory of Sweden. IKEA had previously let some of the perpetrators off with a slap on the wrist, showing mercy for their young age. But the company's patience for these youthful antics appears to be at an end.
In Zimbabwe, the country's long-running ruling party has cleared the way for a nonagenarian Robert Mugabe, one of the world's longest-serving leaders, to run for another presidential term. The 92-year-old is a polarizing figure inside the southern African country, where he's revered by many as a hero of the country's post-colonial liberation. But others blame him for chronic economic mismanagement that has resulted in one of the world's highest rates of unemployment. FSRN's Garikai Chausen explains.
A visibly shaky President Robert Mugabe addressed Parliament on December 6, in which he appealed for calm amongst rising discontent and street violence over the country's struggling economy.
Let us continue to find national pride in our core values of unity, hard work, and freedom. But let us also thank our forces for the peaceful environment that we have.
Those forces he mentions are the riot police who in recent months have routinely broken up peaceful rallies by opposition parties and young Zimbabweans angry over increasing desperate economic conditions. One of those young men is 31-year-old Donald Mavuzi, who graduated university with an urban planning degree.
We actually respect Robert Mugabe. We even respect the role that he played during the liberation struggle. He fought very hard to make sure that Zimbabwe gains political independence.
But President Mugabe's role in 1980 independence movement, during which some 20,000 civilians were massacred, was before Mavuzi was born. And now, despite a college education, he can't find a better job than peddling cell phone parts in the capital.
But unfortunately, he failed to bring through economic independence or economic emancipation to the people of Zimbabwe. And we are saying on that he has failed, he should hand over the baton and allow somebody who is able and prepared to bring through that to the people of Zimbabwe to take over power and actually lead Zimbabwe to a better future.
Yet President Mugabe still has a lot of supporters in the country. They are largely from the older generation who benefited from the controversial land reform policies that saw mass evictions of the white land-owning class from the colonial era. Mugabe's hardline anti-colonialist policies also brought economic sanctions from the United States in 2001, though they were later reversed by President Obama. Ronnie Danga was one of those who benefited from the controversial land reforms. He was granted farmland in Goromonzi, about 26 miles east of the capital Harare. To him, President Mugabe is the guerrilla leader who fought the British to achieve national liberation.
He has built a lot of schools, a lot of road networks, though they are now neglected because of the economic challenges. But what we are saying is he is a good leader. That one, we cannot take it away from him.
Critics inside the country say Mugabe's policies aren't working, and neither are most people. The country's largest union, the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, says the country's unemployment rate has reached 90%. And during the first half of this year, more than 300 firms shut down due to dwindling foreign investment. Cash is literally drying up with a shortage of U.S. dollars that have been the country's currency since 2008, when hyperinflation forced the government to scrape its own money. The government introduced the so-called bond notes, which are supposedly tied to the U.S. dollar, but the bid to reverse the cash crunch quickly ran into trouble with reports of merchants refusing to accept the green paper. More riots are expected as fears of hyperinflation return. It is amid this backdrop that the elderly Robert Mugabe will bid for re-election in 2018. Garikai Chaunza, FSRN, Harare.
The encrypted messaging app Signal has avoided censorship after users in Egypt and the United Arab Emirates reported blocked access over the weekend. Developer Open Whisper Systems released an update for the Android app today, which includes a domain fronting feature using Google.com or other major internet services to access Signal, making it impossible to detect. Signal is a free end-to-end encryption app for Android and iOS, which allows users to securely send each other text, photo, and video messages, providing that all users at both ends, sending and receiving, are connected through Signal. Anyone intercepting the message, from snooping government agencies to the app developers themselves, will be unable to view its contents. To prevent a connection to the privacy app, governments would have to order internet service providers to block not only Google, but all of these large-scale services, functionally shutting down the internet. Egypt did block its entire internet during the Arab Spring protests of 2011, but Moxie Marlinspike, founder of Open Whisper Systems, won't back down, saying, quote, "It's possible that these countries will respond, but the end game is that we'll win." Marlinspike says the update, which includes support for adding doodles, stickers, and text-to-images, will be available for iOS soon.
Members of Portland's Jewish community are gathering right now in Pioneer Square to make a statement against Islamophobia. We have on the line, live from the demonstration, KBOO Web Director Jenka Soderberg. Jenka, can you hear me?
We are live in Pioneer Square. This is a vigil against Islamophobia organized by the Jewish community here in Portland, the Jewish Voice for Peace mainly, to commemorate Hanukkah with a call for ending Islamophobia in our community. So we're here with the brightly lit Christmas tree in the middle of Pioneer Square, people shopping, passing by, and then people sharing stories about Islamophobia and how people are standing up to it. I am here with Ned Roche, who is with Jewish Voice for Peace, and I wonder, Ned, if you could tell us a little bit about why organize this particular event for today.
Well, it's so important in these days leading up to a Trump administration to say loud and clear that our community is absolutely opposed to any kind of talk or action, word or deed of hate, especially against the Muslim community, because they're an easy target and because Trump seems to enjoy doing that. Because Trump is talking about a registry, and there are millions of Muslims in this country that are right now afraid. And so this is a public statement saying we've got your back, we're brothers and sisters, we're in this together, and what affects one affects all.
How is the turnout down there? Are you getting a lot of participation or witnessing from the passersby? And is there a large group of folks who are engaged in the demonstration?
There are a couple of dozen people that are holding up the signs against Islamophobia and racism. And then there are a number of people passing out flyers and also engaging passersby. And yes, a lot of passersby are stopping, voicing support, standing and listening to the speakers and then taking the flyers as well.
Though I suppose we can probably guess pretty well, can you enumerate some of the most immediate causes that prompted this demonstration today?
Well, I think the 900 hate crimes that followed the first 10 days after the election, and there's been many, many more since, and even here in Portland and in Oregon, actually leads the nation in hate crimes per capita since the election of Donald Trump. Emma Lugo's also here, and she's with a Jewish Voice for Peace as well. And Emma, maybe you could talk a little bit more about what prompted this demonstration right now.
Oh, sure. Hi. Yeah, we're here tonight because we want to stand against Islamophobia. We're here because we're here as Jewish Voice for Peace. We're here to stand as a light against Islamophobia, against racism, because we believe that right now with this avalanche of hatred that's coming through the Trump administration, that we must joyfully resist. And so we're here tonight to joyfully resist, and that's why I'm here.
I was wondering, are there any members of Portland's Islamic community present as well?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I was wondering, at the demonstration today, are there also members of Portland's Islamic community, or is this strictly a Jewish community event?
No, there are members of the Islamic community here today. This was organized by Jewish Voice for Peace specifically to stand against Islamophobia. So we're here to support our Muslim brothers and sisters, and that's why we're here tonight. We're very active, like, in every way that we possibly can be to try to raise awareness about Islamophobia. We know that we have a privilege right now. We have a privilege that we need to exercise, which is to make visible people who are afraid right now, because there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear in the Muslim community. There's a lot of fear within mosques. There's a lot of fear within, like, private homes, that people are going to become labeled, that they're going to be made to carry registration cards, that they're going to become what they already are, which is targets of hatred by racists and by people who are fearmongers. And we know that the American people, we know that we resist that and we stand against it. That's not who we are, and we're better than that, and that's why we're here tonight.
Can you share with us who some of the speakers are at the demonstration today?
Well, Maxine Troopson, one of the organizers of Jewish Voice for Peace, helped to organize this event tonight. Would you like to talk to Maxine?
Surely.
Okay, we'll get her in just a minute. So Maxine is one of the organizers. There's also representatives of various interfaith communities here who are here to speak on behalf of other perspectives. So it's getting kind of noisy. I'm going to give you back to Jenka.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Thank you. Jenka.
So as you can hear, they're singing. There are people standing and sharing this message of peace and inclusivity, I think, is the main focus of this evening's event.
Can you tell me, is there any sort of heightened police presence there?
Oh, no. There's no police at all. It's just a group of people here at Pioneer Square and a lot of passersby doing holiday shopping and curiously looking and asking about what is happening. And this follows the city council meeting. A lot of the people who are here were at the city council meeting today, and there was a resolution on the table for a do not buy list for 10 companies to be put on Portland's do not buy list. And a lot of people there were testifying about Caterpillar and about Wells Fargo, particularly that those companies' human rights abuses, both as Caterpillar is part of the Dakota Access Pipeline, and human rights abuses in Palestine, and Wells Fargo for particularly involvement in private prisons.
Did the city council take any action on the divestment motion?
Well, they kind of pushed the buck to the next council as Mayor Hales is leaving and Commissioner Novick is being replaced by Chloe Udaly. They decided not to pull out of corporate investments altogether temporarily until April. at which time they will readdress the Do Not Buy list. So the work of the Socially Responsible Investment Committee, which put in countless hours, was kind of pushed to the next city council to make that determination. But in the meantime, they're pulling out of corporate securities altogether.
Sticking with the topic of divestiture, can you remind us who are the institutions who are debating it, pro and con, and if there are other ones that are coming up?
You mean other than Wells Fargo and Caterpillar?
Yes.
Well, I don't have the list in front of me. I'm out in the square. I know that there's a number of companies. There's 10 total. Those are the main ones that were talked about, but there are other banks, I believe, and companies involved in the military-industrial complex in one facet or another. So those 10 companies, if you look on the City of Portland Socially Responsible Investment Committee page, they have a whole report about why they chose the companies that they did.
Yeah, I mean, what is their rationale for not participating in divestiture?
Well, the city council, Steve Novick and Amanda Fritz put out this compromise amendment, which they see as trying to appease all members of the community. And a lot of people brought up the fact that by just kind of making a blanket statement against corporate securities, that they're dismissing the work of the Socially Responsible Investment Committee, which worked to determine which companies are kind of the worst of the worst. And so they're talking about how it is an equalizing amendment that equalizes different corporations, even those that may be engaged in socially responsible behavior, are being put on the same platform as those which are engaged in egregious human rights violations.
I see. In addition, or besides the city itself, are there other local institutions who are also contemplating independently divesting from Israel?
Well, it's not divestment from Israel. It's divestment from companies that are directly involved in the Israeli military occupation. So it's that distinction has been laid out by those in Occupation Free Portland, who are a part of this movement. There are a number of institutions, including a number of churches, the Presbyterian Church, the Unitarian Church is considering this as well, and a number, and United Methodist Church as well. Several of those churches had their annual, their national conventions in Portland, and so it was brought to the city, and the local congregations took a very strong stance on that. Also, the Portland State University Student Senate recently voted to divest from four companies involved in the Israeli military occupation, Hewlett-Packard, the Caterpillar, and Motorola, and decided to call on the university to divest. The Student Senate doesn't actually have the power to divest the university's funds, but they called on the university to divest from these companies because of their involvement and contracts with the Israeli military.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. We only have about 30 seconds left. Can you tell us how much longer the demonstration that you're currently at is going to continue this evening?
It's going till 6, although I'm sure that this will not be the last vigil against Islamophobia here in the Portland area. This one is here at Pioneer Square until 6. Of course, every Friday, Portland Peaceful Response has a vigil at Pioneer Square at 5 o'clock calling for an end to all wars of aggression abroad, and there are many more similar events that are going on in the city, particularly with the advent of the Trump administration that will inevitably begin in January.
Well, thank you very much, Jenka. That was KBOO's Jenka Soderberg reporting live from Pioneer Square in downtown Portland. Stay tuned at 6. We're featuring a special broadcast of Anti-War Radio featuring Ramzi Baroud on Israel's attempt to silence the Palestinian call to prayer.
You You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Joe Lino, Selena Johnson, Tony LaTigra, Janka Soderberg, Theo Burke, and Dan Raphael. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Tonight's producer was Ray Bodwell. Our engineer is David Kesters. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is myself, Lisa Loving. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Lisa Loving.
And I'm Brian Pritchett. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7 o'clock, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge with Joanne Hardesty. Joanne welcomes one of the authors of Stop and Frisk, the Use and Abuse of a Controversial Police Tactic. At 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch, your weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program hosted by Teresa Mitchell. At 10 o'clock, hear Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. At 11, Between the Covers welcomes Amy S. Foster, author of The Rift Uprising. Tune in to hear her thoughts about military deception, treatment of immigrants, and the bewildering new adult genre popping up in bookstores. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. Here's a reminder that all new and increased gifts to KBOO are matched one-to-one through the end of the year. Thank you to the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. You can go to kboo.fm right now and click on Donate.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station. And now it's time for News from the Boo, every Wednesday at 5:45, where we talk to people inside and around KBOO about what's happening at your favorite community.